Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Australian press baron Rupert Murdoch has been a busy man on the American media landscape, launching Fox News and the Weekly Standard, scooping up the New York Post, the Wall Street Journal, TV stations, and next up, maybe, New York's Newsday or your local paper. He also owns HarperCollins, 20th Century Fox, and MySpace. At a time when the news business is in big trouble, Murdoch is shaping what we read and watch in a big way. Too big, some say. This hour on Point, Rupert Murdoch's big and growing stamp on the American news media. Joining me first today from New York is John Coblin, who's been following Rupert Murdoch's latest moves for the New York Observer. John, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Big man, busy man all over the world and here in the United States. Bring us up to date on the latest. One of the things Rupert Murdoch is up to, in addition to the empire we've described here, he's looking at Newsday, published on Long Island, read on Long Island and around New York. That's attracting scrutiny even from Congress. What's the brouhaha?
Well, it's interesting. Last Monday was a big day for Rupert Murdoch. First, his editor, the lead editor at the Wall Street Journal, this guy named Marcus Broccoli, reports came out that he was resigning. And then about 2 hours after that, the Wall Street Journal, Rupert Murdoch's purchase in December, was reporting that Murdoch was close to getting Long Island's newspaper Newsday for $580 million.
Chump change for Murdoch. He paid billions for the Wall Street Journal, for Dow Jones, which owns it.
It is chump. It absolutely is chump change. I mean, Sam Zell, who's this big real estate tycoon, he bought the Tribune Company around the same time that Murdoch bought the Journal for $8 billion. And this is essentially a fire sale. Newsday is a great newspaper. It makes $90 million a year. It made $88 million last year. And it's a newspaper that really could have gone for about $1 billion maybe 5 or 6 years ago when the climate was better.
Troubles all over in the newspaper industry, but also, I mean, I'm looking here at those latest figures that are out, you know, daily paper circulation down, Sunday down, New York Times down on Sunday 9%+ in the most recent period of measurement there. But also concern out of Washington, here we've got Congress, the Senate Commerce Committee, up in arms about Rupert Murdoch and his spreading empire. Here's Byron Dorgan, Democrat, North Dakota. We really do literally have 5 or 6 major corporations in this country that determine, for the most part, what Americans see, hear, and read every day. He says, I don't think that's healthy for our country. And Murdoch is what's got them upset. Why?
Well, the reason is he owns 2 TV stations here in the New York area. He owns Channel 5 and Channel New York, 2 TV stations, and he owns the tabloid newspaper, The New York Post. In addition to that, he also owns the Wall Street Journal, but that will cause him fewer problems because that's regarded as a national newspaper, even though it's based out of here in New York City. So he's going to face regulatory problems. But the other suitors for Newsday also are going to have issues. Mort Zuckerman owns the Daily News. And the other person who's considering it is this guy named Charles Dolan, who owns Cablevision. And this guy might not have enough money to buy it. So believe it or not, Rupert Murdoch, even though he's going to face regulatory problems from both the FCC and Congress, might be positioned because he's gotten a waiver to own 2 TV stations and the New York Post. And some believe he might get another waiver to buy Newsday as well.
We should say reports of your own publication, the New York Observer, being part of potentially of one of these deals. But I guess Byron Dorgan is not just worried about what's going on in New York. He's looking at media concentration across the country. What does he see here? New precedent set by what Rupert Murdoch may pull off in New York that permits more and more, you know, massive ownership in a single community?
Yeah, completely. And it's a tricky time, just as you said before, Tom, because I would say if this is 10 years ago now, Rupert Murdoch is going to face a lot more opposition. You're not going to just find one or two Democrats in Congress who are going to be complaining about it. But because the newspaper industry is doing so poorly right now, as you said before, the New York Times losing 9% Sunday circulation.
It's amazing.
Here's a guy who actually wants to invest money into newspapers and isn't afraid to lose a ton of money on them. I mean, the New York Post, for instance, loses $50 million a year. And when Rupert Murdoch is ready to invest that money in a dying industry, some people might shrug their shoulders and just let him go ahead and do it.
I know a lot of people at these papers, including the Wall Street Journal, some of them can't figure out if they're, you know, happy to be kind of rescued by big money or freaked out because who knows what Rupert Murdoch will do next. I want to bring in, welcome into our conversation as well there from New York, Dean Starkman. He worked as a reporter at the Wall Street Journal from 96 to 04. He runs the Columbia Journalism Review's blog, The Audit, where he's been closely tracking the changes Rupert Murdoch's been making at the Wall Street Journal. Dean Starkman, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
First, let's go to the, he resigned, but it looks like an ouster of the managing editor, top editor at the Wall Street Journal, Marcus Brauchley. What does it mean? Why did it happen? And who's taking who's stepping into his shoes?
This was a deeply ambiguous and strange event. Marcus Brauchley voluntarily resigned in return for what has been reported to have been a pretty handsome payday. Between the New York Times mentioned figures between $3 and $5 million. So this was a highly ambiguous event. It was clear that Brauchley, from people I've talked to and just reading accounts in the press, including John's work, that Brauchley was under immense pressure to change the paper to suit News Corp's vision.
Now, he was a holdover from the old ownership, the Bancroft family that had owned Dow Jones for forever. And sold to Murdoch last year with a proviso that there would still be oversight from a kind of, editorial credibility panel they put together. They came out today and said this shouldn't have happened with the managing editor, but it's already done. He's got maybe several million and a non-disclosure agreement, so he's not talking, and he's out on a contract somewhere doing something else.
Right. Essentially, what happened was Marcus Brauchley, essentially went along with News Corp's wish to leave the paper in their hands. That put this editorial integrity committee, as you called it, it's an interesting creature. It was created as a sort of at the behest of the Bancroft family that had owned the journal for 100 years. It's interesting that you call it the Editorial Integrity Committee. In fact, it doesn't really have a name. If you look at the actual document, it's the committee created to created as a result of an agreement between Dow Jones and News Corp.
So that was sort of the point, wasn't it? That was the gist.
Exactly. Its mandate is not. It doesn't have a sort of a stated purpose, but it has one job and one job only, and that's to protect the prerogatives of the Wall Street Journal's managing editor, the Wall Street Journal's editorial page editor, and the head of Dow Jones Newswires. Clearly, Marcus's Brauchley's job was encroached upon in enormous ways in the past 4 months since News Corp took over. They didn't act, and as a result, they kind of wound up with egg on their face.
Now, John Koblin, you've got the publisher, Robert Thompson, who was big at the Financial Times and read the Times of London for Rupert Murdoch. He's the publisher, but he's in we hear about him sitting down in the morning news meeting at the Wall Street Journal the other day. For people outside journalism, this might not seem like a big deal, but inside, there's always been this sort of church-state divide. Now you've got the business boss of the journal in the editorial news meeting. We'll look at what it's meant for the journal to have Murdoch take over. But what about that in and of itself? Is that a big deal? Is that the wave of the future? No more church-state divide?
It's definitely not the wave of the future. But at least with Rupert Murdoch, it's certainly the case at the Wall Street Journal. It's interesting. Everything that everybody has predicted about Rupert Murdoch purchasing the journal has basically come true so far. Maybe not true about turning the journal into tabloid. But Robert Thompson is a guy who has always been a Murdoch loyalist. He was at the Times of London, another News Corp operation. And everybody thought this guy would come over. And he did come over in mid-December. And the publisher, as you said, Tom, is generally a business-related duty. But when he came over, they said he won't be doing anything on the business side. He's going to be sort of this guy who's going to overlook all of Dow Jones properties, the Wall Street Journal, the Dow Jones Wire Services. And he had an office on the 11th floor where the executive offices are in the Wall Street Journal's building in the financial district in Manhattan. But then about a few weeks ago, we started hearing that he's moving to the 9th floor, which is the newsroom floor. And all of a sudden, you've got Robert Thompson encroaching surely but slowly, you know, coming in and starting to become more of a figurehead, becoming more of a figure and a presence in the newsroom. And, you know, whether this led to Marcus Broccoli stepping down last week, you know, is something that's still a little bit unclear. But there's no doubt about it. Robert Thompson has the most unusual publisher's role in the entire country at any newspaper.
Dean Starkman, is this, is this just what it's going to take for the news business to survive? Or is this the despoiling of American journalism? Or what do you see going on here?
This move by Thompson into the newsroom is hopefully a one-time event that would be isolated to News Corp and the Wall Street Journal. One thing's for sure, it won't – moving the publisher into the news operation at newspapers around the country won't solve any problems. The publisher traditionally is sort of the meeting point between the editorial side and the business side. Their roles are, sort of overall and sort of very distant responsibility for the content of the entire news operation, including the editorial page, plus oversight of business operations. What newspapers need is publishers concentrating on business problems. Moving into the newsroom is not going to help anything.
Of course, Rupert Murdoch always has a little more than money in mind. Our cousins in Canada, the Globe and Mail, says he's repositioning the Wall Street Journal to take on the New York Times, which he thinks has too much sway over setting America's news agenda, and then maybe bring the Murdoch agenda to bear. We've seen some of that at Fox News and the Weekly Standard. There's a lot to look at here. We're talking about Rupert Murdoch and his stamp on American big media. John Coblin and Dean Starkman in New York, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Rupert Murdoch and the Murdoch stamp on American big media, from the Wall Street Journal to Fox News to maybe one day your town. We've been joined in this hour from New York by John Coblin with the New York Observer. Also from New York, Dean Starkman is with us, former Wall Street Journal reporter. He now runs the Columbia Journalism Review's blog, The Audit, and he's been closely tracking Rupert Murdoch's changes at the Wall Street Journal. We'll talk more about them. Joining us right now as well from Madison, Wisconsin, is Robert McChesney, professor of communications at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, president of Free Press. It's a national media reform organization. He's author of Communication Revolution. Robert McChesney, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
We're going to look at what the real impacts have been in the pages of the Wall Street Journal, but give us the sort of big framing as you see it here. Rupert Murdoch, very vigorous, big mover, still seems to know how to make money or still have confidence that he can make money in a news business where many people cannot and are kind of despairing. So is this the salvation of the American news industry or something else?
No, absolutely not. This is nowhere near the salvation of the American news industry, quite the contrary. I think it's fair to say that this sort of concentration of ownership of news media would be a scary prospect, no matter who the owner would be. I mean, it's just, even if it was someone that we respected and adored, we wouldn't want this much power in that individual's or that individual's company's hands. In the case of Rupert Murdoch, I think we don't have to even have any illusions that he meets that standard, given what he's done to other news media in the United States and worldwide. So this is a very troubling development, and it's absolutely unacceptable for our society. We have to not permit this. It would be disastrous if we were allowed to go through and continue this process further.
Well, but is there really any – we'll look at whether or not there's a way to stop it legislatively. It's not clear to me that there is, but Professor McChesney, I'm looking at the Wall Street Journal in recent months, and the layout of page one has changed. The focus of page one, I see here from surveys, has changed. More foreign news, more political news, as a proportion, less business news. But is that really such a big problem? Maybe, you know, who says the Wall Street Journal was perfect before? Maybe it's better. Maybe it's what people want.
Well, it's not just about the Wall Street Journal. It's about our broader media system, our broader journalism. And the Wall Street Journal has traditionally been the flagship of business reporting in the United States, certainly daily newspaper business reporting. It's had the game to itself pretty much. And it's been a very high-quality newspaper. So any changes he would make specifically there would be marginal coming out of the target audience he's trying to reach in its tradition at this point. And, you know, it's going to always be a newspaper pitched at the upper class and with their interests and needs in place. So I doubt it'll ever be fully a tabloid or even close to it. But that really misses the whole picture. If we're talking about that, we're missing the point here with media concentration and with Rupert Murdoch particularly. What we're talking about now is someone who has a tremendous control, if this deal goes through, not only over journalism in New York City, the nation's largest and most important city, but also over a handful of newsrooms now, going starting with the Wall Street Journal and Fox News, to the extent you could call it a newsroom, and with Newsday, that are central for setting the news agenda for the entire country. So that gives this one individual exceptional political power as well as economic clout.
John Coblin, are you yelling fire here or something else?
It's funny, you know, when I talk to people who are at the Wall Street Journal, you know, I ask them, are you comfortable with this? Is this okay that Rupert Murdoch owns this newspaper? And because the industry is just suffering so much, the comment I get back from them is, believe it or not, saying, at least there's somebody who actually wants to invest money into this newspaper. And, you know, Robert Thompson told the New York Times on Monday this week that the paper will invest $6 million a year, every year, on expanding its foreign coverage.
Yeah.
So whether or not it's a bad thing, I mean, it could be, you know, there are lots of bad things that are currently happening to American journalism right now. But when I talk to people in the newsroom at the Wall Street Journal, it's kind of a wait and see approach. And I think the thing that scares them most are the fact that some of these classic Wall Street Journal traditions, those traditions may go away. But the newspaper as a whole, they feel like could improve, actually.
Dean Starkman, how about it? You worked at the Journal for a decade or so. What do you make of the changes so far, and are you optimistic or otherwise?
I have to beg to differ with my pal John and to some extent Robert. The changes at the Wall Street Journal, it's been interesting to watch in the last 4 months. They've been very dramatic, but they really haven't been coherent. I don't think News Corp would say that this is our vision for the Wall Street Journal of the future, and I don't think Marcus Broccoli, the departing ME, would say that this is what I wanted. It was kind of a tug of war that yielded this kind of hodgepodge that I don't think satisfied anybody.
Yeah, I have to say, but it doesn't quite make sense to me yet. It's become more of a generalist paper, but sort of neither fish nor fowl. Heavy business emphasis, but less business on page one. It just looks more like a regular paper. Why would you do that when regular papers are having so much trouble?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of ad hocery going along, but I'm gonna end the mystery for everyone and tell you what it's going to turn into. I think it looks like they're aiming to make it into a sort of a super version of the Financial Times.
What does that mean for American readers who may not read the FT?
Right, the FT is a British-based paper that's made some inroads in the U.S. market in the last few years. They're you know, to some extent, it's my analogy is not quite right because they are pure finance and corporate news, mm-hmm. but they're what they do is essentially put short business stories on its page one and then analyze the heck out of them. So what I sort of see with the Journal is this sort of same sort of trend. They're going to be you'll be seeing shorter, quote, newsier stories on page one, and they won't be jumping inside. They won't be of any great length. And I have to say, this is not a small deal. It's not sort of inside baseball. The Journal's strength, its franchise, and what made it great was its devotion to long-form narrative mm-hmm. Journalism. This is not one of these things for old timers to wax nostalgic about. It's not something for newspaper purists. I mean, these were really, really important stories that really set the agenda for, the corporate world, the capital markets, Washington, the whole thing. Listen, I encourage everyone to read a story in Monday's paper by Barbara Martinez. It's in the Journal, and it absolutely is straight right in the old tradition of a great Wall Street Journal page one story called The Leader. It's called Cash Before Chemo, Hospitals Get Tough, and it's an incredible, heartbreaking Kafkaesque story about people, particularly a woman in Texas, who have to pay cash on the barrel head before they can get chemotherapy treatment. This is a wonderful exploration of a very important issue, and it's something you don't see in the Financial Times.
But Rupert Murdoch owns the paper, and the story's there. So does that mean he's committed to keeping that kind of story in, or do you see those on their way out?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The trend is away from that. Listen, Wall Street Journal was perfectly capable of writing leaders before Rupert Murdoch arrived. They know how to do that. Mm. What he knows how to do is something else. And his tradition, and you know, you could assign all sorts of malevolent motives to him and whatnot. I don't. I mean, he grew up in something called I call the Anglo-Australian tradition of newspapers, and it's completely different. Tradition. It does not include as much what I call original reporting, which British papers and the FT does is report what institutions did yesterday. Mm. What the Journal did and does so well is reporting things that are off the news and setting its own agenda. Mm. And they didn't need Rupert Murdoch to help them do that.
Robert, to just follow up on one second
yeah, John,
on that.
Yeah.
Robert Thompson, the publisher of the newspaper, he at a bureau chief's meeting back in January, a month after News Corp bought the paper, he was looking at the bureau chiefs at the Journal worldwide and told them that reporting shouldn't take as long as the gestation of a llama, which is 11 months.
Well,
and journal reporters, I mean, there's some people like Josh Prager who at that newspaper who work on stuff for 11 months and then write it for a newspaper that will sit on newsstands for one day and then go to the recycle bin. And Robert Thompson said explicitly, we're not here to do that anymore.
Do you think, John, that that's journalism that cannot be done in 11 days or 11 weeks? You know, is it the kind of thing that we're just not going to hear about or know about if you don't have the Wall Street Journal sending someone for 11 months on those stories?
Yeah, it's certainly something that can't be done. I mean, the only places that could do that if the Wall Street Journal won't invest in it would be big places like magazines. And magazines are, you know, they're probably pretty close to seeing some of the problems that newspapers are seeing right now. They haven't seen it quite as hard, but they will within the coming years for sure.
Robert McChesney, what about this Globe and Mail observation I quoted here from Richard Siklos, saying what he sees is Rupert Murdoch making a play with the Wall Street Journal, generalize it a bit more, make it a direct competitor to the New York Times, and make it part of an effort to sort of get his hand firmer on the wheel of the American news agenda. Do you see that going on?
Well, I certainly think that's going to happen. Whether that's his intent is I can't get inside his head, but he certainly has wielded that power in other nations where he's controlled news media as well, and he certainly enjoys that capacity at Fox News. We can see that. But I think the Wall Street Journal is a special case. It's not going to go the direction of Fox News. It's going to go in a different direction, but it's going to be Rupert Murdoch's direction. You know, and this really touches on a crucial point, which is the assumption here is that this deal will go through. The Newsday deal will go through. Let's be real clear about this. This deal, as proposed, violates the existing law of the United States. It requires a waiver from the Federal Communications Commission. And also, it will have to be cleared by the Justice Department. So we should not assume just because he's so powerful, it will go through. It shouldn't go through if we obey the letter of the law.
But the analysis I'm reading says he's very skilled at playing this. He'll go ahead and do it, then litigate in the courts. It'll take several years. By that time, things change. In fact, everything's changing. The business is in such turmoil.
Well, there are two issues here before we get into the industry being in turmoil, which is true. But the first issue, I think we should all be really concerned about this. Here we have a Rupert Murdoch, and, you know, what we have is he has to go through the Justice Department where it's expected he will get clearance there for this deal. And I think there are grounds to think he'll get his clearance largely because the current Justice Department really will wave him through because he is a friend of this administration. I think that this is the sort of issue that anyone who cares about journalism and media in this country should be alarmed by, that because it sets up a situation then that we have our leading news media in cahoots with administrations in Washington that call into question their ability to be a critical fourth estate, which is what our Constitution depends upon.
Let's get a quick call. Steve in Newton, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
One of your guests said a few minutes ago, you said, well, what is this? Is this the despoiling of American journalism or what? After you had mentioned that Robert Thompson, the publisher of the Wall Street Journal, now has
the despoiling or the salvation, I'm asking. What do you think?
Well, I think it's the despoiling, without question. I mean, when the publisher comes to editorial meetings, you know, your guest said that's not going to solve any problems. He's right. It's going to create problems. The problems it's going to create is they're going to try to advance the business interests as opposed to the editorial interests. So if there's some story that the editorial guys want to do about a big company that's doing something wrong, that's maybe breaking the law, but it's an advertiser, that's a built-in conflict of interest. How can that not create huge problems? And I think we're giving away one of America's, we've given away one of America's crown jewels of journalism. Now Newsday's going to go to this guy too? It's flagrant.
On we go. Steve, thanks for your call. John Koblin, how about it? You say it's just for a while that Robert Thompson's sitting there, but I don't know. And he's there now. That's very unusual. I never saw that in my experience in newspapering. Caller Steve says, you know, that's the beginning of the end.
Tom, I'm going to do the terrifying thing here, and I'm actually going to temporarily defend Rupert Murdoch and Robert Thompson and say this. I mean, Robert Thompson is a newsman, and he was at the Times of London and was at the Financial Times, had a great reputation at both of those places.
But what's his job?
Well, he's the quote-unquote head of content.
But he's the publisher. He is formally the publisher, is he not?
He is formally the publisher, and he's always going to exist in the newsroom. His presence is always going to be there. But whether or not the business interest – Rupert Murdoch did not buy Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal because he wants to make a lot of money. He bought it because he actually does – he has some sort of crazy passion for newspapers at a time when they're dying. And, you know, if you talk to anybody in New York and you look at the two tabloids – the New York Post and the New York Daily News. The New York Daily News, in terms of quality, had a monopoly in the city for years and years and years. Mm. But if you talk to anybody now, in terms of what breaks the most stories, what has the best local government coverage, the best sports coverage, the best gossip, the best real estate coverage, it's the New York Post. It's Rupert Murdoch's newspaper. And he goes ahead and he loses $50 million a year on it. Now, of course, there are lots of troubling things about Rupert Murdoch and Robert Thompson. But it's not that easy to just paint this with a broad stroke and say, this is, you know, the despoiling of American journalism. I don't know if that's necessarily the case.
Dean Starkman, I mean, there's a lot of room in between despoiling and salvation here. But maybe Rupert Murdoch deserves some credit for coming in with capital when this industry is in big trouble. Are you willing to see some kind of gray area here, or maybe even, you know, positive side to what Murdoch's up to?
Yeah, I guess so. Here's how I would frame it. News Corp is a great story. It's a great media story. It's a great business story. And Rupert Murdoch is an incredible creator of shareholder value. I mean, he's he's an amazing businessman.
Right. I mean, incredible. John says he's not in it for the money, but he's made a lot of money. He's not a philanthropist
when it comes
to news business.
If we had more time, I'd take John up on a couple of his points. But my point is, I worked at the Wall Street Journal, but I think also as a reader and as a citizen, I think it's my point is that he's absolutely a terrible owner for the Wall Street Journal. I mean, he's a great story, but he can't be covered by his own paper. Robert was talking about this battle going on in the administration, Justice Department, FCC. I mean, who needs to cover that more than the Wall Street Journal, and who can now cover it less? The Journal, to me, you know, again, I worked there, so I have it's larger in my frame of reference than others. But you know, it is really an indispensable sort of overseer, watchdog, what have you, of capital markets, of corporate behavior, of regulatory issues. You really need someone other than News Corp owning it.
But if it's so great, where'd the subprime scandal come from? I mean, if it was so great before, somebody was asleep at the switch.
That's a terribly good question, and it's so good it's almost unfair. But your point's right. I refuse, I guess, to be put in the position of having to defend the Journal pre Murdoch. You're right. I mean, it is fair to say that the quality of the newspaper had fallen off dramatically in the since the turn of the 21st century, I guess. We're talking about an institution that needs change, but I just don't think News Corp is the change.
Well, so here we are. Nobody's perfect. But what about Rupert Murdoch, John Koblin, Dean Starkman, Robert McChesney? Please stand by. We've got much more here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Rupert Murdoch and the Murdoch stamp on American big media, from the Wall Street Journal to Fox News to maybe your town. What do you think? Does the Murdoch touch mean more conservative, agenda-driven news, or fair and balanced? Why is Murdoch investing in newspapers when others are running away? Is he on to something here? What is it? And how much is too much? Rupert Murdoch. We've been joined by John Coblin with the New York Observer, Dean Starkman with the Wall Street Journal from 96 to 04, now at the Columbia Journalism Review's blog, The Audit. Robert McChesney is with us. He's at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, professor of communications there. Let's get a call from Jane in Toronto, Canada. Hi, Jane. You're on the air.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. If I could make first, I'll say I can't stand Rupert Murdoch. I hold no brief for him at all. My son is in England, and he's seen what he's capable of there. But earlier in the program, you were appeared to be rather upset that Mr. Thompson, and then through him, of course, Mr. Murdoch, was sitting in an editorial meeting. And
it's unusual, let's say.
Pardon?
It's unusual, let's say.
Yes, probably. But as I pointed out to the lady who took my call originally, for about 100 years, both the New York Times and Washington Post, the owners slash publishers of those, both those papers, have bragged about they decide the editorial bent, they decide a lot of the news slant in both those papers, and it's acceptable and it's fine. And then suddenly, if Mr. Murdoch is perceived to perhaps be doing this, it's a major crime. I think that there's a double standard here that it worries me.
It's a good question.
New York, Mr. Sulzberger, for how many years has been deciding what news is fit to print for the New York Times, and nobody said a word to him.
Well, yes and no, maybe, but it's a good point, and let us pick it up. Robert McChesney, how about it? The Grahams at the Washington Post for donkey's years, the Sulzbergers at the New York Times, they may not sit in the editorial meeting, but it's hardly as though they have no influence over the general direction of their newspapers. Jane says it's a double standard to take Rupert Murdoch on so critically on this front.
Well, Jane raises a good point, but I don't really think it's a double standard. Let me explain. Other owners traditionally in the past, say, 50 years have owned news media. We have a commercial media system. But there has been a general respect for the tenets of professional journalism. It varies from medium to medium, but as a rule, that has been in place in our dominant commercial news media. And where I think I disagree with Jane might be that, or agree with her, that it's a broader tendency than Rupert Murdoch. Where I disagree is that I think the real issue here is that we're seeing a real attack on professional journalism by commercial pressures across the board. This is the crisis we're in today. And Rupert Murdoch simply is participating in that process. He's not creating it. He's not the one responsible for the rise of partisanship. He's just simply taken advantage of it at Fox News. But it is a broader crisis. And if Rupert Murdoch were never born, we would be having this conversation about someone else. There's a much broader phenomenon here with the fact of the matter is that the commercial system in the United States is determined that doing what we consider good journalism, what your guest would consider good journalism, beside myself, and what I would consider good journalism, is no longer especially profitable to do.
Let's hear from somebody whose newspaper is right in the sights of Rupert Murdoch right now. With us from Albany, New York, is James Mador. He's a reporter at Newsday. That's based on Long Island, and, of course, a lot of readers around New York City. Rupert Murdoch reportedly has a handshake deal for $580 million or so to pick it up. James Mador is Albany bureau chief for Newsday. James, thanks very much for being with us.
Nice to be with you.
So you may soon be working for Rupert Murdoch. How do you feel about it?
Well, actually, I'm writing this story right now, and we have a bidding war. So it is not yet clear whether or not Rupert Murdoch will be our owner.
Right.
I talked to some sources yesterday who are following the talks very closely. This is obviously Rupert's to lose, but Mortimer Zuckerman, the owner of the Daily News,
right,
and Cablevision, which is owned by the Dolan family of Long Island, are both very interested. Mortimer Zuckerman put in a bid that's about the same as Rupert Murdoch.
Mm-hmm.
Cablevision will be submitting a bid that is higher than Rupert Murdoch and Mortimer Zuckerman's bids. So we still don't know what our fate is going to be, but at this time there's definitely a bidding war. But people tell me that Sam Zell, who's the chief executive officer of Tribune Company,
right,
really wants to do a deal with Rupert Murdoch.
Does it matter to you? You're right there working. I don't know if you can say one way or the other, but does it matter to the paper, in your estimation, which of these buyers comes in? And if it's Murdoch, is that a problem to you or something else?
Well, when I talk to my colleagues and I think about it myself, it obviously matters who your owner is. At the same time, as been said in this program earlier, our industry is in crisis. The work that we do and the commercial model that supports that work is under significant stress and strain. What happens to journalism in the long term is very much in doubt. So, yes, who your owner is matters. And I think if you were to ask Newsday employees 5 years ago, 10 years ago, what do you think about Rupert Murdoch being your owner, the reaction would be very different than it is today.
And today?
And today people are concerned.
Concerned or welcoming it because he's got deep pockets?
Well, it depends. A lot depends on what he does. He has deep pockets. He believes in newspaper journalism. But what does he think our paper should be? And at this point, we don't really know. It's an open question. Does he feel that Newsday should continue to be a serious tabloid, what we sometimes refer to internally as the tabloid in the tutu? Or should we be more like the Daily News and the Post? And if we are, will we be successful? We have we have profits of $80 million a year. And one of the reasons for that profit level is because we are a certain type of paper for a certain type of readership. So the big question is, what does Rupert Murdoch want our newspaper to be? And we don't really know at this point.
There you are, right on the front lines, and we hear that balance between a need to stay financially viable and concerns about ownership. James Madore, Albany Bureau Chief, Newsday, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Let's get a call from South Londonderry, Vermont, and Jason. Jason, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering what influence Rupert Murdoch has directly on the shape that Fox News takes, and then I wonder if that would filter into all of the other newspapers. Robert said something about how the journalism good journalism is on the decline, but it seems to me that Fox News goes one step beyond that and shapes the direction that the news takes by just the way they cover certain stories, and it seems to filter into the rest of the so-called liberal media.
Jason, do you think that the so-called liberal media or the mainstream media before Fox News was not shaping a news agenda? Do you see Fox is markedly different in that regard?
I think it shapes it more negatively. Yeah, it seems. From what I understand, the first Reverend Wright snippets were on Fox News and then filtered down into the rest of the, into the debates and then onto CBS and CNN American journalism is supposed to be, well, we have this idea that it's objective,
mm-hmm.
but Fox is very subjective and in a really negative way, I think, and without shedding any light on the real issues. And so, just listening to the conversations about Reverend Wright's comments. I mean, the at the press thing, he was a little bit too. he went overboard. But when he was on Bill Moyers, he made a lot of sense. And even listening to the whole sermon, he had valid points, but in the way it was brought into the conversation, the way it started, I understand it started on Fox, but the way it was always these sound bites are pulled out, and it just seems, I guess they all do it, but Fox seems a little bit more insidious.
Yeah, Jason, we've got your perspective. You're comfortable with Moyer's interview. Of course, Fox has a lot of viewers as well. So there we are. Dean Starkman, Jason asks, I mean, he sees Fox and what Fox is, and is he asks whether that is a general style for Rupert Murdoch, or is that, you know, the political coloring of Fox, is that reserved for Fox News?
The point about Murdoch's political agenda is, I think, a little overstated. I completely understand where the caller is coming from. You know, Fox does have certainly does have a conservative slant. To me, listen, I always thought that was kind of a very clever commercial decision and marketing decision, and I feel like that Fox was targeted to you know, a certain audience that maybe the silent majority that did resent big media and wanted some sort of an alternative voice, and good for them. But to me, Rupert Murdoch's agenda in this world is commercial. His share value is first and foremost in uppermost in his mind. I really don't think he's really that much interested in politics. And the concern over the years, people are talking about whether the publisher should not be in the newsroom. Listen, the concern about News Corp over the years was that it has a history of subverting editorial judgments to corporate interests. This has happened in China, where they dropped the BBC at the Chinese government's request, mm-hmm. and dropped the memoir of the last Governor General of Hong Kong, because it would mm-hmm. anger the Chinese. Mm-hmm. There were instances as well of them trimming news coverage in the U.S. So that's always been the concern about Murdoch. I understand why people feel he has a conservative agenda. To me, it's really first and foremost a commercial agenda.
Robert McChesney, I want to get you on that, but let's hear from one more caller, perhaps on this front as well first. Rachel in Bridgewater, Massachusetts. Rachel, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
It seems to me that this is really a war on just the basic tenets of objectivity. If we think of that as being apart from a story, of being nonpartisan, of relying on facts, just the direction that the journal is taking to be more analysis and less factual reporting is a departure from what journalism and strict objective journalism should be. And in terms of the point that was just made about Rupert Murdoch's conservatism not being central, it's his business, I think those two are inseparable, because he wants a media environment and a government environment in which he can make money. And clearly he's going to do better if people on the right are in charge who are not going to have trouble with his consolidating ownership.
Rachel, let us pick it up. Robert McChesney, how about it? Rupert Murdoch is a guy who makes clever commercial decisions, or a guy with an embedded political agenda, both? How do you see it?
Well, I think she hits on a key point. She calls it objectivity. I would call it professional journalism is under attack across the board, and Murdoch is at the phalanx there. But I think to sum this up in the whole discussion we've had, the assumption we've been working on is that commercial journalism, or all journalism, is in crisis with the resources to support it to make it viable. And I think that's roundly accepted, and I think that's true. The real issue is what we do about it. Is the solution going to be, since it's harder and harder to make killer profits in the news industry, that we let those handful of capitalists who want to gobble it all up do whatever they please? I don't think the evidence is in that that's a viable long-term, medium-term, or maybe even short-term solution. That's sort of like those factory workers whose unions gave all sorts of give-backs to keep their jobs for a couple more years, but eventually they still moved overseas because the wages were so much lower and we just didn't have jobs, but they got two more years of respite. I think we have to understand this is a fundamental political issue in this country, social problem. Our entire Constitution is predicated on being an informed citizenry. It's the role of the press system to make that possible. And that's been understood from day one in the United States. Jefferson and Madison wrote at length about it. And, you know, they didn't think, well, we'll just let rich people make as much money as possible and hope we get lucky with a free press. They instituted enormous policies and subsidies to spawn a vibrant free press, a fourth estate. As a society, we've got to start thinking in those terms, too, because on the current path we're on, we're headed directly to nowhere in terms of journalism, and our republic can't survive without it.
John Coblin, do you see any legal stumbling block here? We've heard, it's been suggested that Murdoch's takeover of Newsday would violate the law. It's been said straight up. But is anything looming out there that might stop it, Senate Commerce Committee or anybody else?
I guess you have the FCC and you have Congress out there that can stop it. I mean, it's a point that Robert made earlier. By law, Rupert Murdoch can't own Newsday.
Because you're not supposed to own much TV and newspaper in one city.
Precisely, because he owns two TV stations and he owns the New York Post already. And then to have Newsday, which comes into New York and is in the New York area, that's just that. I mean, that's too much. But, you know, he's gotten that waiver in the past. And, you know, the articles that you're reading are the articles that I'm reading, the one by Richard Siklos and another one by Devin Leonard, which is saying that Rupert Murdoch knows how to massage his system and he knows how to get around it. And again, you can't undervalue this, but it is a suffering industry, and I'm wondering if there will be allowances made. I mean, it's good hearing from the Newsday reporter before and hearing that there is a bidding war. In fact, Mort Zuckerman, late last week, he put $580 million, put up a $580 million bid for Newsday, and he's the owner of the New York Daily News, the rival to Rupert Murdoch's New York Post. And the reason that Zuckerman put up $580 million, which is the same amount that Murdoch reportedly bid, is because he said, I won't have the regulatory problem, so Sam Zell will just have to take this. But Sam Zell is a businessman at the end of the day, and apparently he wants a good relationship with Rupert Murdoch. He wants
Sam Zell to Rupert Murdoch, maybe, and off that one may go. But as you say, there's a bidding war on and a lot at stake, a lot on the table. I'm grateful to each of you for being with us in this hour. John Copeland, The New York Observer. John, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Dean Starkman, Columbia Journalism Review's blog, The Audit. Check it out online. Dean, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Robert McChesney, Professor of Communications at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Always good to have you. Thank you very much for being with us, Bob.
My pleasure, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.